maybe some of you have heard of this story about two little boys, a younger brother and an older brother, who were very mischievous and always getting into trouble. Maybe you know these two boys, or maybe you were one of them yourself. There was any trouble in town, these two were probably involved, and their parents knew all about it, but they didn't know what to do. The boy's mother heard that a preacher was in town who had been successful in getting wayward children back on track, and so she asked the preacher if he would speak with her boys. The preacher agreed and asked to see them individually. And so mom sent the younger one in first in the morning, and the preacher was this huge man with a huge voice, and he asked the boy, "Do you know where God is, son?" And the boy made no response and just sat there with big wide eyes and his mouth hanging open. So the preacher asks again, a little bit sterner this time, "Where is God?" Again, not a word of answer from the boy. And so a third time, the preacher raised his voice one more time, shaking his finger and shouting now, "Where is God?" The boy screamed, ran out from the room all the way home, dove into the closet, slammed the door. His older came, found him in the closet and said, "Well, what happened?" The younger brother, gasping for breath, replied, "Brother, we are in big trouble this time. God is missing, and they think we did it." I was told this story recently by a dear 96-year-old widower at the reception that he hosted in his home following the memorial service of his beloved wife of 71 years. They'd known each other in high school, hadn't dated then. According to him, she was way out of his league. But it was only after they reconnected a few years later. He had graduated from college, they were young adults attending the same church, that they started seeing each other, and by then he had gained a little bit more confidence, at least enough to begin courting her. And it wasn't too much longer before they realized they wanted to spend the rest of their lives together. As one might imagine, in a marriage that spanned 7 decades, they had their highs and lows, different seasons, different chapters, and a critical turning point happened about halfway through their marriage, when Jane realized at the age of 60 that she desperately desired to remake her life and to remake their marriage. There were many things that she wanted to do, not the least of which was to discover who she really was, beyond her identities and roles as wife and mother to their now grown children. She wanted to have her own garden. She wanted to learn how to sail her own boat. She wanted to grow emotionally and spiritually. She wanted to be healed and feel whole. It turned out part of this was her wanting to go back to school to finish her college degree. "Well, why do you want to do that?" an acquaintance inquired. "So I can learn how to think," Jane replied. "Well, but why? You have your husband to do that for you," the person said. "Well, I need to learn how to think for myself," was Jane's immediate response. Their daughter, Nancy, tells a conversation she overheard while visiting her parents. It went something like this. "I'm not cooking anymore," Mom told Dad. "I'm done." "Poor Dad," Nancy wrote. "I remember him sitting on the couch in Maine after that, with Dad asking, 'Well, what's for dinner?'" "Asparagus," she shouts from the chair. "Where is it?" Dad asked. "In the fridge," she replied. He took the bunch out. Well, what do I do with it? Well, first she said, you wash it. So Dad washed it. And then you break it where it bends. Well, where's that? He asked. And it went on like this. Here, here, as Mom watched Dad, the engineer, tackle the asparagus. And so years passed, and the two of them shared preparing meals together, an important truce and a new shared space and a new way of seeing and being in the world that she initiated and he followed, a new way of seeing and being in the world. Today's gospel story from Matthew lifts up another courageous woman, desperately desiring healing and wholeness. And in this case, it's for her own child, for her daughter, who is tormented by a death-dealing spirit. Many of us know what that is. Either we have been tormented or our hearts are aching for someone we love who is tormented by a death-dealing spirit. And what this woman encounters is Jesus, the itinerant rabbi, preacher, healer. He is filled with the Spirit of God, and also he is fully human. A bit of context here. Remember, Jesus and his team have been busy, right? We've been following along in the Gospel of Matthew, and Jesus has been teaching and healing and doing wondrous things like walking on water, after having recently fed 5,000 hungry men. And if we were to count the women and children, some scholars say it could have been up to 20,000 people fed that day. And most recently, he's just lectured some religious authorities and scholars who've been giving Jesus a hard time about his followers not ritually washing their hands before eating. And so Jesus has been lecturing the religious authorities and agitating them to blow up their limited understanding about what it means to be pure. It's not what goes into our mouths from our hands that defile us, Jesus says. It's what comes out of our mouths that proceeds from our hearts, those evil intentions. That's what defile, not eating with unwashed hands. And so it's right after this conversation then that Jesus and Team Jesus, they move on and they travel to Gentile territory, to the district of Tyre and Sidon, the land of the other. And this is where today's encounter and exchange happens between Jesus and this woman. Matthew uses the term Canaanite. In the Gospel of Mark, she's referred to as Syrophoenician, or Greek, and Matthew's use of the word Canaanite is really meant to lift up that ancient, ancient, deep-rooted animosity between the children of Israel and those who inhabited this part of the land. So here we are, a woman whose heart is aching for her suffering child. She calls out to him, drawing attention to him in public. First of all, she's a woman calling out to a man, and she refers to him as Lord. Even though she is a Canaanite, even though she is a Gentile, she calls Jesus Lord, Son of David. Have mercy on me. It makes me remember Peter, who was drowning in the water after having just been walking on the water. Save me. It's the same impulse. Save me. Help me. Save my daughter. We can relate to what ends we will go as a parent who wants the suffering of their children to cease. There are some verbs here that I want to lift up for you, some imperfect past tense. She continues. She is kneeling. She was bowing. She is approaching. She is agitating in the world of community organizing. She is agitating him because she knows that she must persist in this agitation to move the world as it currently is to the world as it should be for her own daughter. What about Jesus? Remember those bracelets, WWJD, what would Jesus do? Well, what Jesus does is not what we would expect Jesus to do, right? This is hard. This one is one of those hard ones. First, he does nothing. He ignores her, no response. And then when his followers ask him to just, you know, get rid of her, just do whatever, just get rid of her, then he talks about his mission being only for the children of the house of Israel. This isn't for everyone. It's just for a few. It's just for the children of the house of David. And then, one of the most difficult passages for me to read, where he talks about food meant for the children shouldn't be given to the dogs. Ouch. A little more looking at that text, the word used there is kinarios, which is a diminutive form of kion, dogs, and a little more research shows that in that part of the land with the Syrophoenicians and the Canaanites, they had pets. They had domestic dogs, but for Jews, dogs were unclean and they were scavengers. So you get the gist of what's happening here. And then the moment where this courageous woman who is willing to go to the ends of the earth for her child says yes. She meets him where he is and she says yes. She takes that metaphor and she runs with it. And she says yes, but don't even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the family's table. And when you look at the Greek, then Jesus' response comes with first an oh, and coming from deep emotion. Oh, woman, great is your faith. Let it be done as you desire. And at that moment, the girl is healed. Now, there is a traditional view that says that, you know, Jesus meant to do this all along, that he knew what he was going to do, that Jesus in all his divinity knew. He was just testing her. But there's also an alternative view, one that I'd like to lift up, that just as Jesus was divine, he was also fully human. That part that we can relate to, the part that is limited by our own social and cultural context, it says, this is the way it is, this is the way that it should be, but because of a personal interaction with another child of God, we change. We are given an opportunity to change our minds and change our hearts and open our minds and hearts to be more expansive, more like that of our living, loving, liberating God. It's a one-on-one relational meeting that agitates and transforms, moving the world as it is, as it was, closer to the world as it should be. Because get this, this is interesting, I think, to lift up. The healing of the 5,000 happened among Jewish people. That was just before this encounter. What's going to happen after this encounter is the feeding of the 4,000 men, and if you add women and children, maybe 16,000 people, that we hear in the Gospel of Mark happens in the Decapolis region, which is Gentile territory. Do you see what's happening? Do you see what's happening? Multitudes hungry are fed, children of Israel, this encounter, and then Gentiles, thousands of them, are fed from the banquet of the living God as made manifest through Jesus. What an extraordinary encounter. I'd like to go back to where I started with Jane and her husband, Perry. They made it through that change in their marriage and life, and they realized not only did their love for one another expand and grow outside of the box that they had been living in, the love that they had for one another went beyond just their own family and their old children and grandchildren, and they became very invested in being part of an organization that made sure that children in Honduras are educated and fed. So Jane and Perry also, through their interaction and agitation with one another, persistence and faith, their circle of love grew wider to reflect more and more the loving and liberating and life-giving God. So what about you? What about me? Where is it that perhaps someone in your life is persistently agitating you to revisit the way that you view something or someone or a situation or a place? How is it that you are being agitated and invited to have your heart and mind more fully reflect the love of our living God? There's a hymn that goes like this: draw the circle, and draw the circle wide, draw it wider still. Let this be our song. No one stands alone, standing side by side. Draw the circle wide, draw it wider still. May God's Holy Spirit continue to agitate and move and breathe through us, that we may manifest more and more that love and boundless mercy and healing of our Creator, following the footsteps of Jesus. Amen.